Coming up on The Balanced Word.
Here in chapter 18, we see nobody really seemed to get it except him, and yet it didn't drive him crazy. It did not seem to frustrate him. It didn't throw him off his game. We see Jesus is in control of himself. He's in control of his emotions. He's not being, you know, getting frustrated with people. And boy, there's something we could learn, because if we could figure out how to live our lives without being frustrated by people who don't get it, wouldn't that be amazing? Wouldn't that feel good?
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hand and the instrument I play. Wake up my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel is pleased to present The Balanced Word. If you're a regular listener, you know that we've been spending a good deal of time in the Gospel of John. What an amazing account this is. It's filled with the miraculous works of Jesus Christ and offers intimate glimpses into the heart of God. Today, Pastor Dave Rolfe will share a message centered around the arrest of Jesus. We've all heard stories of unjustified arrests, but this one takes the cake. He was completely innocent, and we can glean some important lessons from it all on how to deal with difficult and ignorant people in our lives. Turn to chapter 18 as we join Pastor Dave.
Turn in your Bibles to John chapter 18, because we're coming to the end of the Gospel of John. We just have, there are only 21 chapters. So after this week, we will have three more chapters and we'll be finished with the Gospel of John. It's been a great trip through this amazing book. Here in John chapter 18, this is like the last night of, well, it's Jesus' last night of freedom, and ultimately his being taken and arrested and tortured and tried, and a lot happens in chapter 18. It's certainly a bleak evening if you look at it from a human perspective. Oh man, what a mess. But it also, as I was reflecting on this passage, it helped me to consider what it was like for Jesus all the time. Because, and it's never illustrated any better than in chapter 18 here, that Jesus, from the time he was born, he was surrounded by people who just didn't get it. He was surrounded by people with various levels of ignorance and foolishness. And when he was 12, his parents are like, why are you here discussing theology with the theologians? He's like, what did you think I would be doing? Didn't you know that I would be about my father's business? And then he's just working in construction most of his life. And you can imagine what that was like for him. He finally, goes into ministry. It only lasted for 3 years. As he's preaching mostly to people who didn't get it, even the religious leaders were clueless when they listened to what he had to say. And for every one of us, I think one of the greatest tests in our life is when we are surrounded by people who don't get it. We feel like everywhere I look, people are just, how can they be so dense? How come you go to a grocery store and they have it marked very clearly, this aisle is for 10 items or less, and somebody has like 50 items, and you're like, are you kidding me? You drive your car, you're out on the road. There are people who, don't seem to know how to drive at all. And then they don't think anything of it, that, they're in the fast lane, but they're going slow, but they won't speed up or slow down, so you can't get past them. All of life is that way. You work with people who are like this, and it's like, you're pulling your hair out if you have hair. And you go, I'm surrounded by fools. Now, if you're going, I'm not surrounded by fools, you're the one. So. But now put yourself in Jesus' place with the stuff he dealt with. And here in chapter 18, we see nobody really seemed to get it except him. And yet, it didn't drive him crazy. It did not seem to frustrate him. It didn't throw him off his game. We see Jesus is in control of himself. He's in control of his emotions. He's not being, getting frustrated with people. And boy, there's something we could learn, because if we could figure out how to live our lives without being frustrated by people who don't get it, Wouldn't that be amazing? Wouldn't that feel good? So beginning with the first verse, it says that after Jesus had prayed, they went out. He went with his disciples over the brook Kidron, where there was a garden which he and his disciples entered. And Judas, who betrayed him, also knew the place, for Jesus often met there with his disciples. So they went from the east side of Jerusalem. You go down the hill to the Kidron Valley, and you go back up onto the side of the Mount of Olives, where the Garden of Gethsemane is. Jesus would go there often. Apparently, when he was in the south, when he was in Jerusalem, that was one of his favorite places to go and pray. And it's really a moving thing, if you've been to Israel, to go to that garden and just sit there and be able to pray and know Jesus prayed. Some of those trees in the garden are old enough that they could have been there when Jesus was praying on them. And, you know, but he has this time of prayer. Now, John doesn't go into details about it. All three of the other Gospels let us know that this was the time when he was agonizing with the Father. He was praying passionately, Father, if there's any way out of this, please do it. But I'm submitting to your will. He was sweating like drops of blood. Well, during that time, what were the disciples doing? His best men? Well, they kept falling asleep during the prayer. And he'd like come back, why don't you guys wake up and pray? This is the time to pray. Don't you realize what's happening? And they're like, okay. All right, we'll be praying for you, Jesus. And he heads off, and in the back of his mind hears, you know, the disciples. Probably one reason why John doesn't tell that whole story is he was asleep. He missed most of it. But and then Judas, one of his disciples, the guy that he trusted enough to make him the treasurer for the disciples, Judas had gone out and betrayed him, sold him out for just a handful of coins. Now, you can try as hard as you want to figure out what was Judas' motivation. People have done movies to try to speculate, why did Judas sell out Jesus? I don't think you're ever going to make sense of it. If you just think, well, Judas was a guy who wanted the money, well, that doesn't really jive, because he came back and threw the money down and tried to reverse the deal. Also, he was the treasurer. If Jesus had continued to minister for a few more years and he's skimming off the top, it would have been way more profitable for him to continue as a disciple. Something was going on in Judas's head, but there's no way that it made sense. He was just being ignorant. He was led by something that, and obviously we know the devil was certainly tempting him. We know that this had been prophesied, that it was going to happen. But you have 12 guys, and one of them sells you out. What does that feel like? And then we go on and read where Judas came, and in the other Gospels it says he gave Jesus a little kiss so they would know who Jesus was. But Jesus said to the, you know, and look at, they brought in verse 3 a detachment of troops and officers from the chief priests and Pharisees. So these are like religious cops. I'm not sure why they had a whole troop of religious cops. But they came with lanterns, torches, and weapons. You never see Jesus trying to go after somebody with a weapon. Now, his disciples were armed. We will see this, that Peter was armed. In one of the other Gospels, it said that they had two swords between them. So they weren't just like some peaceniks that were opposed to defending yourself. But these guys are bringing this whole army to try to capture Jesus, which he had been in their midst all along. If they wanted to arrest him, if they had grounds for charges, they could have done it. But here they come in the middle of the night to do this. And Jesus said to them, who are you looking for? Whom are you seeking? In verse 4. And they answered him, Jesus of Nazareth. They knew it was him. But they're just like, Jesus of Nazareth, that's you, right? And he says, and Judas is standing there watching, and he said to them, I am. Now, in your Bible, it probably says, I am he, but you'll notice that he is in italics because it's not in the original. What he said in Greek is, ego eimi, I am. Now, we'll talk about that in a little bit, but I am is generally a verb that is accompanied by some sort of predicate, nominative or adjective. So usually you say, I am this or I am that. He just said, I am. And what happens? When he said, I am, these guys just fell back on the ground. They were blown away. And you start thinking, wow, who's in charge here? And then he asked him again, who did you say you were looking for? Jesus of Nazareth? He said, I told you, I am. Therefore, if you're looking for me, let these guys go. He goes, let the disciples go. Now, in just a moment, Peter is obviously still there, but in the other Gospels, it says that eventually all the disciples ran away. So how's that feel to Jesus? He's a human. He's got these buddies that have been with him for years. Now, he's by himself. If I said, hey, let these guys go, and they're like, okay, we're out of here, I'd be like, hey, wait. I mean, you don't have to go that fast. But they ran away. He was in charge. He was in control. They apparently let them go away. And then, you know, Peter had a sword, pulled it out, swung it. Obviously wasn't a trained swordsman, because you usually don't intend to take somebody's ear off when you swing a sword near their head. But again, it's like, Peter, nice. That's a good job. We find out in the other Gospels that Jesus goes here and put the ear back on, and it was healed from Malchus, this servant. But Jesus said to Peter in verse 11, put your sword into the sheath. Barney, put your bullet back in your pocket. He said, shall I not drink the cup which my Father has given me? He goes, I was just in the garden going, let this cup pass from me if there's any way. And there's no way. So this is what I have to do. I don't need you to defend me. I am receiving that which is happening. Amazing. And so ultimately, Peter left. They arrested Jesus. And check it out in verse 13. In verse 12, they arrested Jesus and bound him. He just said, I am, and knocked them over. But they're like, we better tie this guy up. What are you thinking? He's going willingly. He just said, this is okay. This is what we're going to do. And so they led him away. And you can read on down through there. There was this interaction of a couple things happening. They were led, first of all, to Annas, who was probably a former high priest. So they still called him the high priest. But he was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, the guy who was functioning in the role of high priest. So apparently they had some sort of power of succession that would, okay, first you go here, then you go to Caiaphas. And these guys don't know what to do with Jesus. They just know that they want him dead. And so when they tied him up and took him in, and by the way, John throws in there, remember Caiaphas is the guy who at one point God just told him to say, doesn't it make sense that one person would die for the people? And he totally didn't know. He's talking about Jesus dying for people. So they took him in. And while this is going on, while they began this preliminary hearing for his trial, Peter, and apparently John doesn't name himself, but he says one of the disciples had hookups with the high priest, so he was able to get into the courtroom, and he mentions Peter was waiting outside, couldn't get past security, so then John went out and put in a good word and let Peter come in. All this time, as they're questioning Jesus, Peter is like saying he doesn't know him. The girl watching the door, aren't you one of his disciples too? Implying that she knew John was, and he's like, no. And somebody else comes along as he's warming at the fire. Aren't you a disciple of Jesus? No, no. Finally, third time, there's, you know, he denies it vehemently. And at that point, a rooster crowed. And he remembered Jesus had told him, you will deny me three times. So now we have Jesus, whose best friends, his buddies, one betrayed him, sold him out. The next guy who is like probably the one who was most affectionate toward Jesus in a lot of ways, although you could make an argument that John was, but Peter's the guy that walked on the water with him. Peter's the guy that said, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. I mean, it's Peter. It's the first pope. And not really. But and he's like, I don't even know Jesus, right in front of Jesus. Jesus is right there being interrogated, and he's like, I don't know the guy. And we find out that then Jesus looked at him, like, and not like with a condemning look, just like, yeah, you know, you thought you knew. You thought you knew yourself, but not so much, not as much as you think. And so then while this is going on, the high priest is questioning him. And basically, first in verse 19, he asks Jesus about his disciples and about his doctrine. And Jesus just says, you guys have all been there when I was teaching. You know the people that have listened to me. You know the people who've believed in me. Why don't you ask them what I say? In fact, why don't you listen yourself? I haven't done anything in secret. The things that I've said are the things that I said openly. And he says in verse 21, why do you ask me? Ask those who have heard me what I said to them. Indeed, they know what I said. And at that point, some officer of the religious leaders slaps him in the face. Don't mouth off to the high priest like that. And Jesus said, look, if I've said anything bad, tell me what I said wrong. But if I've spoken well, why do you strike me? So Annas is like, I'm not getting anywhere. So he sends him to Caiaphas. And as he goes to Caiaphas, and you know, then you have the interlude of Peter denying him. And then Pilate, you know, went out and said, what accusation do you bring against this man? To Caiaphas. Pilate says that. And they answered, verse 30, and said to him, if he were not an evildoer, we would not have delivered him up to you. So the Roman government with Pilate, they are watching this process in the preliminary courts. But Pilate's trying to get ready, do his research for his trial, which, remember, the Romans were obsessed with justice and doing things by the book and everything. So they're like, Caiaphas, what charges are you laying against him? What did he do wrong? So we can deal with this. And Caiaphas, the highest ranking religious leader of the day, says, look, we wouldn't bring him here if he wasn't guilty. How do you think that would go over if a DA did that? Brought somebody to the court and the judge says, so what are the charges? Come on, I don't bring people here unless they're guilty, okay? I mean, this is absolutely crazy what they're doing in the name of justice. And so, you know, Pilate said, you know, hey, why don't you guys take him to your court and deal with him? And they said, well, no, Caiaphas, the religious leader of the people, says, well, no, because we already know he's guilty and we already know he's going to get the death penalty and we're not allowed to do that. So Pilate's like, okay, fine, you know, you're not going to do it. So he decided to come to the praetorium and to interview Jesus himself. And by the way, it's interesting that in verse 28, the Jewish leaders wouldn't enter the praetorium, the Roman government office, because they didn't want to defile themselves. They're like, you know, it's Passover, so we don't want to go into your filthy court because then we can't take Passover. Do you see the irony? Passover was about Jesus. And here they are. We're religious leaders. We're going to lie. We're going to murder. We're going to deceive. But we don't want to walk into the praetorium because that would defile us. I'm sure Jesus felt like just grabbing him by the throat. What are you doing? How could you do this? Why would you think that murder doesn't defile you, but walking into the praetorium defiles you? But he gets in there, and Pilate's trying to figure this out. And so he said, so, Jesus, are you the king of the Jews? In verse 34, Jesus said, are you speaking for yourself about this, or did others tell you this concerning me? Pilate answered, am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you to me. What have you done? Pilate, what a goober he is, that he's like, so here you are. Tell me what you are charged with. They won't tell me. And Jesus is like, so you want me to be prosecutor against myself and defendant? And Pilate's like, I don't know. I don't know what to do. I don't get it. So he begins again, you know, what have you done? And Jesus said, look, my kingdom isn't of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight so that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now my kingdom is not from here. He goes, I'm not fighting this thing. I'm not battling. We could have defended ourselves and escaped in the middle of the night, but we didn't. So Pilate says to him in verse 37, so then are you a king? Jesus just probably shaking his head. You said it. I'm a king. This is why I was born. This is why I've come into the world, that I should bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice. Pilate's like, what is truth? That would have just made me cringe. Like, what is truth? You don't get it. But Pilate, being fair-minded, after he said that, he turned around and said to the Jews in verse 38, I find no fault in him. Finally, somebody who understands, Pilate, this righteous Roman leader, politician, and he goes, I find him innocent. He did not do anything wrong. So you think, so can I go now? He's like, no, tell you what. He goes and tells the people, okay, I'm going to let somebody go today. Jesus didn't do anything wrong. There's this guy named Barabbas who's a notorious criminal. Which one should I release? And the people are like, let Barabbas go. Now, not only for him to ask that question was incredibly dumb, but for the people to choose to release somebody who's a dangerous criminal compared to somebody who had just healed people, loved people, taught people, didn't fight against anyone. This whole crowd had gone absolutely nuts. And again, you look through the whole story and you're like, Jesus, how in the world did you keep your cool? How did this not just make you call fire from heaven? How did this not make you just, as you're there in the court, go, I am, I am, I am, and watch people falling down? I mean, I would have done some kind of trick, but Jesus is just like, no, it's okay. I'm not going to fight it. This is the cup that my Father has for me, and I know who I am. And he keeps his cool through this kangaroo court, and he goes off to ultimately be crucified for us. I look at it and think, man, what if I could deal with the people who are doing ignorant things around me the way that he did? How different would my life be if I'm just not completely stressed all the time?
You're listening to The Balanced Word with Pastor Dave Rolfe. As we go through the Gospel of John together, there may come a time when you'd like to hear a message again. You can do so rather easily at thebalancedword.com or call and request a CD copy at 949-362-7475. By the way, we're making this complete series in John available to you on a thumb drive for a donation of $10 or more. Go through this powerful gospel from start to finish with Pastor Dave. Again, call 949-362-7475 and we can help you with that. Please remember, it's your support that allows us to bring the teaching of God's Word to the radio every day. Thank you for standing with us. Again, we can be reached at 949-362-7475. Or you can make a donation and resource request online at thebalancedword.com. We'd like to invite you to visit us at Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. Pastor Dave Rolfe teaches most weekends. And you can hear him teach the Word Sunday morning at 8, 9:45, and 11:30. He always enjoys meeting his listeners, so please say hi after the service. Visit ccpacifichills.org for more information. Check out Pastor Dave's one-minute messages, a great way to start the day. You can listen to them at thebalancedword.com or watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. Pastor Dave recalls this experience out on the highway as we close.
This week on Thursday, I decided to take a little drive just to spend some time with the Lord, and I headed up 395 going up towards Mammoth. And you go across the high desert, it's this beautiful flowing road, and then it's going up into the Sierras and snow on the mountains. It's awesome. The only thing wrong with it is the idiots on the road. It's just like, come on. And it's either, you know, you make your move, you pass like five cars, and then, oh, here's another tourist with a rented RV in front of you. And you're like, ah. And then finally it just hit me as I was reflecting on this passage. You know what? These people are stealing my joy. I'll just let them do what they're doing. I'll keep my distance. And man, it was so much better. If I had just kept racing, going 90 to pass, see how many cars I could pass at once, I would end up getting up there maybe 10 minutes faster, and I would take an hour or more off my life, you know, in stress. How would our lives be different if people just couldn't get to us the way they couldn't get through to him? And I would suggest to you that for him, we see in this chapter at least some clues. First of all, he started in the garden. And again, John doesn't make a big point of it, but we know it from the other three Gospels. He was praying.
We'll continue to see how to deal with difficult people in our lives, just as Jesus did, next time on The Balanced Word with Dave Rolfe. This program is brought to you by Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel.
Wake up, my soul. Wake up.